Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is the writer S.M. Ford, and she is out with her brand new novel, Memoirs of the Senator's Wife. The book is available now on Amazon and other fine retailers, wherever fine books are sold. And Sally, I read this book in, well, two sittings, I guess, throughout the course of a day, a week or so ago, and there are so many different plot spoilers, or what I think are plot spoilers, throughout the different parts of this book, so I don't want to give anything away, so can you kind of summarize this thing for us?
Sure, well, it's an international best-selling saga. Basically, it works on the premise that the heroine is a false identity. She won't find that out until further on in the book. However, I kind of wanted to just drop that information so that we can kind of have a deeper conversation about the novel. It's a dark romance. It involves a handsome politician, a forbidden love affair between the politician's wife with a sensuous Secret Service agent, and the magic that influenced history. It's set in the 50s, present day, and their romance spans decades of the most turbulent times in America.
The book, there's quite a bit in there about this whole idea of New England society and education and, you know, an Ivy League school. It's a fictional Ivy League school. You fictionalized it. But what did you draw on for the experience of Ivy Leaguers? We know it today, but what would the experience have been like in the 30s and 40s?
Well, I guess I drew upon, my own personal experiences and other experiences, going to college that are elite colleges. And I also drew upon my aunt who had a false identity and ended up marrying a wealthy man and doing work for the community in that marriage.
And we also find the idea that permeates throughout the book is this whole idea of the different classes that people not only come from, but what they become in society. And sometimes that's difficult for us to read when we read about people that are maybe in different classes than us and how those classes have inherent conflicts throughout their lives. So when you create that conflict in your book, what's the driving force behind the conflict of the classes?
Well, the driving force is power. People don't want to lose power to other classes, to the lower classes, the power, classes that have power. So they do all types of different ways of keeping their power so that, they're always on top. I think that's what the real driving force is, to create a pyramid of a class so that they can always be on the top of that pyramid.
You also tapped into something in the novel about how candidates run for office, and you talked about mesmerization, and it's hypnotism, power, and mental influence. I know that's something that exists a lot of places, but I haven't really seen it set out so succinctly. And so can you kind of describe how that works and why certain people have the ability to do that and certain people don't?
Well, this is a book that's a magical realism book, so I'm not going to, to say that, people can actually do that. I'm just saying that, this is a book of magical realism. Basically in the book, it is because of their genetic makeup combined with training.
And the drumbeat throughout the back of this book, for a lot of it, is the civil rights era. And it seems like as we went through the era in the book, the different stages of it came through. How did that era affect the people in the book as far as what was motivating them to behave the way they did?
Well, because of the false identity theme in the book, that was the underlying motivation of a lot of the work that was done for civil rights in the novel. And basically, civil rights was a big issue during that time period. So it's very difficult to not discuss civil rights if you're discussing politics of that era. So it did have a very a focus in the novel because of the whole self-identity thing.
The idea of civil rights, I know that your family was involved in that particular era. How so?
Well, my grandfather was a civil rights leader, and he did a lot of work. My family did a lot of work for the civil rights movement. I've seen pictures of him with, you know, six different civil rights leaders of that time. So, you know, I'm not saying that he was, you know, the highest level in the civil rights movement, but he did do civil rights work.
Another thing that you touch on in the book is this whole idea of a separate society in Washington, D.C. There's societal D.C. and there's political D.C. I've thought about this in modern days. I never thought about it in the civil rights era and going back, and I guess that's silly of me to think about it, but as the players play, is there a lot of crossover between the people who are popular in the D.C. society and D.C. politics, or can you be one and not the other?
I believe that you can be one and not the other simply because history shows features of that time period discussing secret societies such as John F. Kennedy's speech that he gave, discussing the fact that he was against secret societies at the National Press Club. I don't know if you remember that speech from that time period, but I guess when he first came into office, it was maybe a few months into his office where he gave that speech. So I think that, you know, there have been secret societies for a very long time, and there are some people that can still, you know, become successful without that secret society. However, it's possible that, you know, a course of the secret society might also assist you as well.
I'm chatting with S.M. Ford about her new novel, Memoirs of the Senator's Wife. The book is available wherever fine books are sold. You can get on Amazon or other online retailers and order a copy, something to read and entertain you during this time of craziness that's going on. Sally, as we continue through this, one of the things that I found interesting, as I looked at the cover of the book, when it showed up in the mail, I didn't realize it was going to be about the 50s and 60s. There's a very modern-looking photo on the front cover. Interesting tactic for the art design. Where did that come from?
Well, you know, if you look at what they're wearing, it's kind of classic wear dress from that time period. Could have also been, think about the Rat Pack and how they dress with their suits and you know, that look. As far as the couch is concerned that they're sitting on, if you look at some of the the magazine articles of that time period, that was a new look of the couches. That was something that was new that was coming out at that time. So I wanted them to look like they were, you know, cutting edge, but still, you know, in the 50s, but cutting edge.
And
as far as the Capitol building being in the background, it kind of says that the book is about their home life, which it was, but it's also influenced by, of course, the D.C., life.
There's a lot of very painful parts of this book to read, and I don't want to give away any plot spoilers, but there's some difficult parts to read. And I think you know what I'm talking about. Are those difficult scenes to write when there's certain things going on that most people would just want to close their eyes and believe doesn't happen?
Yes, it is very difficult to read some parts of it. But there are other people from that time period that have memoirs that have similar situations happen to them. You know, so, you know, it was very common that situation would happen that I have in the book. I won't go into the particulars of different actresses that married people who did similar things to them, but they've written them in their, you know, in their memoirs of stuff, similar situations happening that have happened to this to the main character in the novel. So across the world, you know, the same similar deep, dark, difficult situations are happening and still happening to this day, just not as much in America as it used to be, but, you know, in other parts of the world more so now, because we had a women's rights, you know, movement that really changed things for women.
The titular character, Estella.
That the main character was a part of. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
The titular character, Estella, there were parts of the book where I felt sorry for her. Then there were parts where I thought, well, she's selfish. And then there's other parts where I came back and said, oh my God, she's a victim. When you take somebody like that, everybody has flaws. But do you have that experience as you write, that you both love her, hate her, feel sorry for her, all those emotions wrapped up into one?
Yes, I think that no one is a monolith. Everyone has different facets to their personality, aspects to their personality, and just make one-dimensional victim or one-dimensional, you know, villain or one-dimensional characters, it does not work for me, because I have to, you know, basically give that the good and the bad and the ugly of the person. I think it's a real person, correct? Everyone is like that. I mean, no one's completely a villain. No one is completely a heroine. We're a combination of all of these different aspects of our personality. And a lot of people might, you know, hate Xavier, but, you know, there are different parts of his personality that you're like, oh, I can see how she kind of loved him in a weird way at first. You know, so it's kind of a situation where you have this love-hate, you know, scene in the novel. But sometimes, for the most part, you do feel sorry for the heroine, but she turns around the situation for not only herself, but for other women as well.
Something else I found interesting is you really tapped into the humanity of a Secret Service agent. We see Secret Service agents on the news, and in history, they're standing there, they're emotionless, they're faceless, and yet the Secret Service agent in this book, Michael, has a very real human aspect to him. As you put Michael together, how did you decide how far to go with his humanity and, you know, to let him break out of that role of a traditional stone-faced Secret Service agent?
Well, just having known Secret Service agents in my life, you know, they do have, you know, their own personalities and their own thought processes. They're not just stone-faced. They do have their own feelings. So it was not difficult to tap into many of these characters, because many of them, I've just met people that are like them or similar to them. But, of course, it's like it's inspired by, you know, people that I've met on, you know, through my life, but it's not about them.
And for the Secret Service agents that you've met in your life, they sit and read something like this. Does it ever make them want to clam up and say, uh-oh, I'm going to end up in a book if this series keeps going on? Like, you've got the second book coming out.
You know, I would never say anything that I feel, you know, would be specific about a specific person that's going to, you know, make them say, this is about me.
And there's a part.
I don't.
No, I understand. There's a part in the book, though, where the Michael and Xavier and Estella's daughter ages throughout the book. And when you age characters, do you have to take a mental note of how their personality would change throughout the course of years as you visit them? You know, years down the road on the pages.
Yes, I definitely did. As you can see, the evolution of Michael, you know, even though he's, of course, the hero of the novel, towards the end, he gets a little bit fed up with the situation, as any normal person would. I find that in many, you know, novels, you know, that are fictitious novels, that, you know, the hero is always the hero, the villain is always the villain, the heroine is always the heroine, but I like to make them more like real people that have ups and downs in their thought processes, their personalities. You know, they might make mistakes sometimes, you know. So I like to try to make very multidimensional characters that do, you know, have a changes and progressions in their personalities through the book. You can notice that when Estelle was younger, she thought as a child thought. And then as she became an adult woman, her thought processes changed over time. And her mother even predicted that it would.
All right. This book is called Memoirs of the Senator's Wife. It's by S.M. Ford. The book is available wherever fine books are sold. Go on Amazon or any online retailer and pick it up. Sally, absolutely entertaining book. I mean, it was a page-turner for me. It worked as a thriller. And I thank you for joining us today to share some words about it.
Oh, thank you so much, Brian. I appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. After all the stops and starts, we keep coming back to these two.